The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League, Liverpool's win at Newcastle means the title race will go down to the final day of the season. Chelsea upset the odds aside going for the top four actually winning, while Spurs are all but guaranteed Champions League football next year despite having a very odd red cardy day in Bournemouth. All that because Manchester United and Arsenal somehow fail to get a win against Huddersfield and Brighton respectively. Cardiff are down as Neil Warnock stares straight down the lens and into our souls. We'll have all the ups and downs from the Football League as Sol Campbell completes the great escape for Macclesfield. In Fitbar, could Jose really be going to Celtic? And has Alan McGregor been eating Alfredo Morelos' porridge? We'll round up the rest of Europe, answer your questions, and see if anyone wants to counter Paul Doyle's anti-Lionel Messi diatribe from last week. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jonathan Wilson. Do you think Lionel Messi is good?
I really like watching him play.
Excellent. Mark Langdon, do you enjoy watching Lionel Messi play football?
Very much so.
Excellent. Archie Rintutt, do you think Lionel Messi has a future as a footballer?
Yes, but I think we should hold a minute silence for Paul Doyle's mentions.
Paul is okay, I believe. But listen, we welcome all feedback and we very much enjoy everyone saying, never let Paul Doyle near this podcast again. He's clearly not a football fan. We appreciated those greatly. Let's start then at St James's Park. Newcastle 2, Liverpool 3. Liverpool keep the title race going then to the final day. That was fun, wasn't it, Jonathan?
Yeah, it was. And yeah, Liverpool, I don't think, play particularly well. I think they look pretty tired, pretty ragged. But yet again, they managed to get a late winner. So that's now five games they've won in after the 80th minute this season, plus the Sturridge equaliser with Chelsea. So that's 11 points they've won in the last 10 minutes of games. And you compare that to City, who, yeah, their latest result-changing goal was Sane's winner against Liverpool, which was like the 72nd minute. So Liverpool are ragged, they're clinging on, but they do have this habit of scoring late goals, whereas City control things.
Is this the narrative now? Liverpool are humans and Manchester City are robots.
Well, it's a narrative. I mean, you do just start to think, if I were a fan of one of those two teams, if I were a City fan, I'd be thinking, what's the point of these five late winners Liverpool have got? It's because we, City, are going to mess this up. And you know, there's no point in those goals. And now, from a narrative point of view, you wouldn't put in a red herring that big. And that's why, you know, that's why destiny, even if you don't believe it, it does start to play a part.
Unless City, of course, last two games.
Yeah, right? But you know, when you're playing sport or whatever you're doing, you just get days where you think, yeah, today's my day. It's all going my way. This is great. And days when the opposite happens. And I just wonder if that starts to get in City's heads. I mean, yeah, they've shown absolutely no sign of it in the first 36 games of the season, so probably not. But especially with the Rodgers factor, that again, it just feels like the scriptwriters are signalling tonight's the big night.
Well, we'll find out. Possibly the biggest talking point of this game, Archie, was that free kick late on that led to the goal. Fabinho's dive. Liverpool fans, Manchester City fans, rather, irate that they cut that clip of the linesman staring straight at Fabinho, and it does seem ridiculous that he's given a free kick for that.
Yes, but doesn't the referee whistle shortly before that? It's not necessarily the linesman's call. I wasn't at St James's Park. Were you there, Jonathan?
I wasn't there, no.
I think if you were there, it would be harder to see than if you saw it on the telly. But
yeah, look, it's about how Newcastle then defend that as well, to be fair. But
You're not encouraging my conspiracy theory.
No,
here.
No, because I don't think there is one.
No.
Barry's theory, the teams try hard against Liverpool, so the officials feel a need to sort of even that out.
Sounds exactly... Barry and I have been working on this for a long time.
I think Divock Origi, though, is fast becoming Liverpool's new Neil Mellor in terms of the amount of important goals he's scoring every now and then, but not necessarily going to get a big run in the team. I think that the character of this Liverpool side, as Jonathan has said, is quite something. But this must be the most exciting title race that we've had.
because no one's slipping up. It's not topsy-turvy. It's topsy-topsy or turvy-turvy. I'm not sure which one. Mark, can you get irate about Fabinho's dive?
No, not really. Okay. It's one of those where I think most referees would still give it. You know, as soon as somebody, we've seen it in other games this weekend, as soon as you get touched and you fall down, usually do win the free kick. I agree with Archie. Usually what happens is the referee kind of blows and the linesman, his reaction is to them flag. That's generally kind of how it works, because he doesn't want to be seen to be missing the foul. But I felt that the goal that I enjoyed most was the Salah one from the Alexander-Arnold cross. Brilliant goal all round. And it's Johan Cruyff mentioned this about the person with the ability should take the throw in, because they're the free person, you know, once the ball comes back into play. And Alexander-Arnold, he's not like a right back in the way that he kind of passes the ball and can deliver a set piece or a cross. And I really enjoyed that goal. I thought that was a brilliant moment for Liverpool.
A word on that goal from Rondon, though. That was the most satisfying goal to see, just from a perspective of, well, a low-level football player. Just having the connection of it was so sweet that...
My favourite kind of goals are the ones where someone absolutely wellies it. The idea that Alisson or any Liverpool player could complain that Perez was interfering with Alisson's eye line. Alisson could have been standing behind the ball and it would have just taken him in, wouldn't it? Rondon's been named Newcastle's Player of the Year. But he'll go back to West Brom at the end of the season, even though he wants to stay. Newcastle could get him for between 15 and 20 million.
My understanding of the deal is that they have to pay 16.5 million.
Right.
If West Brom do not get promoted, 20.5 million if they are. And of course, West Brom's promotion campaign is being spearheaded by Dwight Gale, who's on loan from Newcastle, who Newcastle gave a bigger contract to persuade him to go to West Brom. So that's some fantastic economic management there.
The idea that Rafa would want to do Liverpool a favour, how ridiculous is that, Mark? I mean, surely Rafa and Brendan Rodgers don't, for their own personal managerial CV, they don't want Liverpool to win the title after them.
No, I can sort of see that argument from Brendan Rodgers' point of view. I mean, Rafa Benitez probably would. I mean, if it was to come out of Liverpool or Man City, he'd rather Liverpool win, but he was never going to, you know, roll over and allow Liverpool to win that game. I thought the big talking point was, should Alexander-Arnold have been sent off for the handball, and would you be better to have a man advantage and the penalty or the goal? But I think it's very difficult for a referee to judge at what point in a game, you know, the opposition team would rather have that situation. Because if it's in the last minute, you'd rather have the goal. If it's in the first minute, you'd rather have the player sent off. And, you know, I think it'd be very tough for a referee to work out at what point in that game, you know, the advantage is to have the goal or the penalty.
Yeah, I think once the player puts it in the net, you just give the goal, right? So if Newcastle hadn't scored, yeah, they'd sort of deliberately just stopped. I don't know, but it's the law on that seems to have changed, because I remember Sunderland's Kieran Brady handling the ball on the line.
Yes, that's right.
Against I think Oxford way back
correct.
In the early 90s.
Yes.
And Oxford scored, and Brady was booked for the attempt. But it appears now that if the advantage is played and the goal scored, it's just forgotten about.
How did that affect your season?
I mean, almost certainly badly. I mean, to be honest, that's the wrong sentence on the tailspin that we're still enduring.
I mean, this idea about Rafa and Brendan Rodgers, you do wonder, is there any part of Rodgers thinking, I wouldn't mind if City win tonight?
No, can you imagine Rodgers if Leicester take a point tonight? And yeah, his big beaming face telling Liverpool, yeah, I've just won you the title. Like, I laid the foundations for Klopp and I've just finished it off for you.
And to beat Pep as well. I mean, Brendan Rodgers thinks about himself, you know, as we've seen with the, you know, moving away from Celtic when he did. And, you know, I don't see any reason why he would sort of care for...
Well, that's another... If this were a Netflix series, Brendan Rodgers leaving Celtic feels really implausible. Yeah, that's the weakness in this plotting. That's just not a realistic thing to do for him to then be in position to win the title for Liverpool.
In this Netflix show, can Leicester trouble City. It seems like not a seems like if you were going to pick a side that could potentially give them problems, Netflix have chosen well in putting Leicester City.
But I think Leicester have, I mean, obviously they've beaten City once already this season. Beat them or drew with them?
They beat them.
Did they?
Mm. But Rodgers wasn't there then. But
no, but I mean, those players have shown they can. And yeah, Maddison did a really good job on Fernandinho. That line of four creators, I think, are very, very technically good, very good in the break. But they got great pace with Vardy and with Gray. So yeah, they are a team who, as much as anybody, can look like they could be able to trouble City.
Mo Salah might miss the Barca game on Tuesday after being carried off. He's being assessed again today. Firmino's already out. Mark, do you give Liverpool any hope?
This won't age particularly well if they do, but not really. No. I mean, it's very difficult. If Salah scores that goal at 3-1, I think that there would have been a fair chance of the comeback because they played very well last week, Liverpool. But 3-0, I think, is going to prove beyond them. I think they may sort of score early and, a bit like City did to Liverpool last year, where it becomes tense. But as soon as the away goal, goes in, if it does, then, the atmosphere just around the stadium just dies, really.
This is set to be the first two-legged tie that Jurgen Klopp has lost in Europe during his time at Liverpool. And I think that if you said to me, you're 3-0 down and you have one coach, you can pick any coach to try and achieve that comeback, you would still pick Klopp. But that said, with Salah out, difficult to see, but
But if Barcelona...
You can't write Klopp off.
True. But if Barcelona persist with this, I'm trying to think of the right words to describe him, sort of just bloodless, cold-hearted attacking midfielder, Lionel Messi, if he persists with him, then maybe they've got a chance, Liverpool.
He's quite good.
Yeah, fair enough. Bournemouth 1, Spurs 0. Two red cards for Spurs. Let's deal with him in order. Heung-min Son. He's not that kind of player, is he?
His hand did get trodden. I mean, he shouldn't do it. Obviously, it is a red card. But Lerma did seem to tread on his hand, so Lerma possibly should have got a red as well. Mm-hmm. And Eric Dier probably should have been sent off as well. So
yeah.
Across his time in Germany and England, that is the angriest I have ever seen Heung-min Son. Because he is just not that kind of player. He doesn't lose his rag. You wonder whether all these games that... I mean, he didn't play in the first leg against Ajax, obviously, but you wonder whether the stress of Tottenham season is even getting to him. Maybe that tells you everything about what they're on the cusp of.
Someone was telling me that because the push was below the neck, it's not officially violent conduct.
Well, it depends. It depends whether it's deemed a push or a punch.
It was a push, right?
Yeah, it's a firm push. And I think that line between firm push and punch is pretty blurred.
Yeah, I mean, obviously...
So, yeah, he could have got away with it.
Yeah.
Because he did sort of... he got up in a fury, and then you could almost see he was kind of calming down by the time he sort of does give him a little shove.
I'm not sure what part of Lerma's body was hurting so much that forced him to roll over, but that is why you go down, isn't it, in that situation? Because if he would have stayed up, then it probably would have been a yellow card. And
might not even have been a yellow.
No, but a few minutes earlier, you said it was uncharacteristic. Lerma did quite a nasty body check on Son, and I think that sort of had wound him up as well as the incident.
But Lerma treads on his hand, right? That's a yellow at least. And then he should get booked for diving. So really, he should go.
I think if you tread on somebody's hand, it's a red.
Yeah.
Like, that's really, he very easily breaks somebody's finger doing that.
Yes, and maybe my Spurs bias is coming through. Foyth's red card, a curious thing to do 3 minutes after coming on when your team are already down to 10 men, Archie?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty clear, straight red card. And particularly when you're already down to 10 men, to be going over the top of a ball like that, I think just shows Spurs' desperation in this instance. But for Foyth to do that, not particularly clever. And you'd think, okay, nobody will come close to doing something like coming off the bench and getting a red card that quickly, except Jonatas in the Bundesliga this weekend came off the bench, scored at Bayern about 5 minutes later and was sent off 9 minutes later. So
good effort.
A Juan Foyth impressionist.
Look, and you're right, Eric Dier should have got a red because after being booked, he did two bad challenges. One should have been a penalty for Bournemouth. So Spurs got away with that. Then they hold on with nine men and Wanyama decides not to defend the last corner. Totally ridiculous. We should credit Mark Travers starting for Bournemouth. the youngest goalkeeper to play in the Premier League since Joe Hart in October 2006. After he's almost caught out by Lucas Moura from the halfway line, which was a lovely strike, made some really good saves, Matt.
He did, yeah. And as well as the saves, he looked very sort of comfortable and confident on the ball, which is, particularly, I suppose, the way Eddie Howe plays his football. That's how, he wants his goalkeepers, to play out from the back. And he wasn't... it would have been easy, wouldn't it? I think after being sort of lobbed by Lucas like that to have retreated, but he didn't, and he showed excellent confidence, made the saves. Just as far as Tottenham were concerned, although they were creating chances against Bournemouth, they didn't control the counter-attack at all. That's six away defeats in a row now in the Premier League. Dyer's yellow card, which should have been, came from a counter-attack. Alderweireld, who was subbed off because he'd been yellow carded, also was a foul on the counter-attack. So while Tottenham looked like they were going to score sort of every time they went forward, that sort of midfield and defence is looking very vulnerable at the moment.
They did have nine men.
No, for
the entire second half.
No, but in the second half, they actually looked more comfortable in some respects because Bournemouth then didn't know sort of how to attack Tottenham because the counter-attack wasn't an option, and they only created maybe one or two chances.
Reminds me of one of my favourite Cambridge games where I've probably brought it up before, but David Ellery was refereeing, so we're all very excited to see someone actually famous on the pitch. And we played Cardiff, and they had three men sent off, including one man sent off for deliberate handball on the line. And the final score was Cambridge United 0, Cardiff City 0. And by then, it was just utter hilarity in the North Terrace that we couldn't score against eight. It just looked so ridiculous, 11-8. Are Spurs playing anyone in the near future who could perhaps take advantage of a team that aren't that defending that well against the quick attacking side?
Yes, they got Ajax in the second leg of the Champions League semi-final, Max.
Who prepared with a 4-0 win in the Dutch Cup final.
Well, it's good of them to bother to play on a weekend.
Well, that's a fair point.
I'm amazed they weren't too tired, the poor Burns.
Willem II, they beat 4-0. Most of the players who played last week started this, but they could make some early substitutions. Mark Jeffries, who is the Daily Mirror showbiz editor. Mark, you're a Spurs fan.
Yes, that's correct.
Would Mark go vegetarian for a month if it meant Spurs won this year's Champions League?
No, because I'll be hungover for at least a month. And every time you have a drink, you need to have some sort of kebab or bacon roll to go with it.
So hang on, I'm guaranteeing you the Champions League for Tottenham, but you're not allowed. You have to eat only vegetables and fruit for a month.
Cheese.
Oh, you can have cheese. Yeah, you can have dairy. And, yeah.
No, I'd take my chances that we can do it anyway.
Okay. How much hope do we give Spurs, Jonathan, against Ajax?
35%.
Oh, quite a quantum leap style answer there. Well, Ziggy says there's a 35% chance.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ajax at the minute are a better team. Maybe they'd be a better team anyway, but certainly with all Tottenham's absentees and the fact that they look exhausted. But if they get an away goal, then suddenly the thing changes.
Producer Johnson says 35% is the same as the possession that they'll have it in that game. Archie, what do you reckon?
That Ajax performance away at Spurs, there was that spectacular 20-minute period in the first half. But apart from that, when you talk to people who have watched Ajax all season, they say that was their worst performance in the Champions League.
Really?
So I think that the pressure is still off at Ajax because there is no real expectation on them to achieve anything.
Do you think the pressure's off? I think this might be the first game where actually the pressure's suddenly on them for the first time in this Champions League.
I think it's still more on Tottenham.
Do you? Because I think people are now saying Ajax are favourites. I would say this is the first game where those players might think this is this is such a great chance, etc., etc.
But I still think that they're only going to get better in this game, and if they really do play their game, then look. They managed to play it against Real Madrid and still lose 2-1 at home, and then you only have to look and see what they did in that second leg. So I still make Ajax favourites. I might even go for a 25% chance for Spurs.
I've just had a think about it. I'll go vegetarian for a fortnight. I think around 25%. About right. I think Son and Sissoko will make a big difference for Spurs. And now that they've effectively sealed full spot, they can have a kind of free hit at this game. And I wasn't that impressed with Ajax outside of the first 20 minutes. Mm. Really.
Ajax have won their 15 of their last 17 in all competitions. Spurs have only won one and lost every one of the last 11 away games. Ajax 7-2 on to make the final. We shall see what happens. Huddersfield 1, Manchester United 1. So Manchester United out of the running for the Champions League. They took the lead through Scott McTominay. Mistake by Jonas Lursell. Made up for it with that great ball for the equaliser, although Luke Shaw's air kick helped. It is really fun if you're watching on Sky just to have another existential crisis from Gary Neville on air. You know, most of us have them just at home, but he's just there. God, I don't like watching any of this Man United side. They're awful. Are they awful?
They were yesterday, yeah. I mean, just such a lack of aggression, intent. When they had the ball, it was so much walking. You can say they're probably a little bit unlucky in the game, given that Pogba hit the woodwork twice. But, you know, they really didn't maximise their chances. They just didn't look bothered, which seems an extraordinary thing to say.
Hmm. I mean, I find this... I'm still not sure if they're not bothered. That's because I just think every footballer, when they cross that white line, you know, they want to win.
To me, it just looked like Scott McTominay hadn't got the memo, really, because he's running round and trying his hardest. And I'm not sure that the rest of them were. And some of the, I mean, Phil Jones on the ball had an absolute nightmare.
Well, I mean, he did, but he wasn't helped by people not moving into space for him. So I tend to be sort of fairly pro Phil Jones. I just remember that one performance against Spain for England when he played in midfield and was excellent. And sort of assume that he'll come
nothing
back.
Nothing in the last sort of 5 years changed your view.
I mean, it is starting to be eroded. That is true. The crashing of the waves on the cliff of my faith in Phil Jones is slowly wearing at the limestone of that belief.
For Manchester United and this whole not looking bothered thing, it comes back to me to Pogba. Because the deal that they did for Pogba, because with that deal they sold themselves down the road for any kind of dressing room culture or indeed club culture, because in that move they were saying that the player is bigger than the club.
So what, when they decided him over Mourinho, not when they signed him for the first time?
Well, both, actually, I think, as well. And you look at what that encourages, and it encourages this idea that it doesn't really matter in terms of what the manager is. You only have to look at the fact they spent $800 million in 6 years. And in that sense, Manchester United have sold the identity that they built in all that time and have said, actually, it's all about the stars and the publicity. And if you trace that back as to where in the club that comes down to, that's Ed Woodward.
Sure.
And so long as Ed Woodward is at Manchester United, or he doesn't change, they're not going to win a Premier League title.
I just don't know how they're going to get rid of... I mean, everybody's talking about this clear out, but it's much easier said than actually done to get rid of all of these players that they, you know, don't want, given the contracts that they're on. And, you know, players I personally would think they would like to keep would be De Gea, and still De Gea and Pogba would be, you know, two of their best, if not their best players. And they're sort of two that seemingly... and not that happy at the club. And there's a lot of players that have just signed new contracts, like Martial, who's disappeared in recent weeks, Alexis Sanchez, Luke Shaw got a new contract pretty recently, had a nightmare at Huddersfield. I mean, how do you get rid of
Pogba?
All of these
is far
players?
Too powerful a player in the dressing room, though. That's your problem. He is an outstanding player. Let's be clear on that. He showed that in the World Cup. Showing that across a league season is different. But with Pogba... And you look at how the likes of Jesse Lingard and Marcus Rashford are led by him in a club.
But we know this? Do we know this?
Yes.
Okay.
you want the structure, you want the power to be higher up, not with the players. If the players are running the show, forget it. And you only have to look in terms of who the most successful sides are in the Premier League right now. They are the ones who have got their structures correct. You have Manchester City and Liverpool in the way that their recruitment is on the same wavelength as their coach. And there is a lot of agreement in that. With the other four members of the top six, you look at Chelsea, Maurizio Sarri has shown in terms of with his team selection this season that he's not always been happy. With Tottenham, it's slightly different because Mauricio Pochettino hasn't been able to sign players at all. Mm-hmm. And then with Arsenal and Manchester United, I mean, Arsenal's transfer policy, I'm sure we'll come on to in a moment, but that is equally baffling. And then you look at United where it's, okay, who can we sign? Who's the most kind of popular player that we could sign right now. They're not signing players who would be right for the team.
So would you, because like Mark says, what do? You get rid of all the players who don't seem to have the right attitude. That's all the good ones. You get rid of all the players who aren't good enough. That's all the bad ones. You don't have anyone.
I think Pogba almost becomes a symbolic sacrifice you make. That you get money for him, so that would help fund rebuilding. I agree with Mark. He's clearly a very good player, but he's not very good consistently. Is it worth the hassle of trying to make him a consistently good player? Or do you think, actually, we'll cut our losses, we'll get the money we can for him, and also, hopefully, culling Pogba will persuade others that, you know, we might get culled ourselves.
Do we still have to give Solskjaer some credit? Because they were not in the running at all for the Champions League, and they've got close, and he's done that.
His points tally across his time at the club is entirely reasonable. It's just he got them all in the first half of his games.
Should we go to Dragon's Den and develop a sort of new type of corner flag that's sort of more springy and just comes back up in a sort of, you know, like a weeble? Is it a weeble?
Yeah, I think corner flags are one of the great weaknesses of football design. I just don't think they're strong enough. I don't think they're good enough. I think they should be more flexible. I think they've got bigger over the years. Although, having said that, I think maybe they just weren't standardised in the past, because I also have a idea in my head of an 8-foot corner flag in a early 80s game somewhere. Anyway, I think
corner maybe you're flags, sort of in Sabutio, well, they were much bigger than the players, like the corner kicker was.
No, I mean, I can tell the difference between Sabutio.
Okay, good.
I mean, it was quite hard to tell the difference between Sabutio and United on Sunday, the lack of movement. And
what if you had one of those wacky, waving, inflatable arm, flailing tube men?
Yeah.
Kind of things.
Yeah, yeah, because if you kick them, it was Mpenza who scored the equaliser and kicked it over.
Or,
yeah,
you know, if clubs want to maximise their income, which they clearly do, you get a child who's good at standing still to just stand there with a flag on his head her head.
Like a sponsorship, like you can be a mascot.
Yeah, you'd be pay. I'd be a corner flag for a half for the whole game.
I'd like to hear Tim Cahill's opinion on this.
Mm, very good. It'd be definitely worth asking. He would maybe like a punch bag, not the heavy round ones, the little ones that go. Ba-dum. I always think boxers look at their best when they're punching those. Richard Jolly, stat from him: Huddersfield's 1-1 draw against United. The first point of any of the relegated teams have taken against the top six this season. Played 35, 1-0, drawn 1, lost 34, 4-18 against 103, points 1. Jonathan, we know the Premier League isn't good anymore. You don't need to do that rant again. On Huddersfield, a word about Dean Hoyle, chairman who's stepping down, selling the club to a lifelong fan, Phil Hodgson, after 10 years as chairman, taking them from League 1 to the Premier League. A good person running a football club. I mean, that's slightly unheard of. Do you want to praise him?
Yeah.
Great.
Got relegated, didn't they? It didn't work.
I think the best thing he did was finding the right people, mm-hmm, in the likes of David Wagner and Stuart Webber when he was there at the club, and just letting them get on with their jobs and doing everything that they needed to encourage that structural overhaul that there's been at Huddersfield in terms of whether it was the training base or indeed that squad. And I'll never forget the tears from Dean Hoyle when they won that playoff final penalty shootout against Reading. You could really feel what it meant to Huddersfield and indeed to him. And I think, given his stewardship, the club is going to be in a decent position to get promoted next season. Then you'd expect them to be knocking about the top half in the championship, in the championship at least. So a very successful and reign at the club.
Mm. And Callum Grant looks like a good player, doesn't he?
I saw him play a couple of times for Charlton in the first half of the season. I actually thought that Lyle Taylor may be the better one of the pair, but they're both were very good at League One level, and he has given them a threat inside the box. And I think for Jan Sievert, he definitely needed a result like that to just, I think, build trust and confidence from the fans and probably those that are staying for next season in terms of the squad, that, you know, he can head the team in the right direction.
Arsenal won, Brighton won. So, you know, after the United result and given what happened to Spurs, Arsenal needed a win to really have any realistic chance of making the top four. Just 1 point from their last four games. And they took the lead really early in this game. So you sort of thought after that they couldn't throw it away. But they were bad, Jonathan. Or they are bad. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, what, I suppose looking at the longer... I mean, they were bad yesterday, yeah, but looking at the longer term, I guess you say over top six, they've probably got the weakest squad. So, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be...
Is their squad weaker than Manchester United's?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe it's not. Maybe I just sort of assume United's will be better. Are we saying that the teams have finished in the positions according to how good their squads are? Is that what's happened?
It seems it might have done, yeah. Denim John says, realistically, what will happen first? Arsenal keeping three successive clean sheets or UMAX finishing reading the blockbuster book Inverting the Pyramid? Well, they conceded because of that penalty for Brighton. I mean, what's Granit Xhaka doing, Mark?
I don't know. I mean, it's astonishing to find a player that accepts a penalty decision that went against him. And I mean, I thought at first glance it looked soft, but Xhaka's reaction, you knew that he clipped him. It was with his knee, wasn't it, rather than sort of the shirt pull.
Tugged him as well.
Well, yeah, but there was also a coming together. It was a foolish moment because Brighton, they looked relatively dangerous, I suppose, but they still... I'm not sure they would have scored. I mean, Pascal Gross showed afterwards that, you know, that they have got problems in front of goal. I didn't think Arsenal were quite as bad as what it used to be just saying. I thought that they missed a lot of chances to True. Go to. And even after it went to 1-1, Aubameyang, who has got that in him to miss a sitter, him and Cavani, probably sort of two that you'd say of the elite forwards, seem to miss more of those than anybody else. And he should have scored and they had a lot of pressure. But I think Brighton showed the integrity of the Premier League, as Huddersfield had done earlier, because they were fighting for everything in that last 20 minutes, almost as if they had a former Tottenham player as their manager.
With Xhaka, because I've not tried to sledgehammer enough Bundesliga chat in already,
yeah.
There has been no evolution or development in that player, and that sort of lack of discipline, you just wonder, when will he learn? And indeed, with a lot of Arsenal's other signings as well, they have been kind of popular choices of players who have been signed not necessarily at their peak in form from when they've been performing in the Bundesliga. I mean, Henrik Mkhitaryan, Bernd Leno, Socrates, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang as well. These are good players, but is there a real team that's being moulded that? Emery has, I think, made a decent stab at it with this squad, but... still, the sacrifices that he has to make in terms of playing Lacazette and Aubameyang up front, I think in his perfect world, he would only have one of those strikers because then he could give much more to the team. Mm-hmm. But so long as he has to play both of those because of the wages and the status that those players have in their squad, I think Arsenal are going to have trouble. But can you see Arsenal selling one of Lacazette or Aubameyang in the future? Or can you see one of them being happy on the bench at least?
Have we all been saying Aubameyang wrong?
In France, they say Aubameyang.
Okay,
so. Definitely Aubameyang in Gabon.
Okay,
and they also say Griezmann when sort of Griezmann is sort of the
right. Okay, I'll correct that. I mean, look, Brighton were great. Duffy and Dunk are fun, aren't they? When they're just heading everything out of the box. And I thought Yves Bissouma had a brilliant game. I've not really spent a lot of time watching him. I watched him and thought that he could really.
His link-up with March was on the Brighton left was really effective, yeah.
In the rumour mill this morning, a certain B. Glendening wrote that Barcelona could go for Lacazette for £70 million. They want Rashford as well, Barcelona, apparently.
Well, Barcelona are looking at a number nine striker because Luis Suarez is coming towards the end. I know he was a great goal he scored against Liverpool, but they are looking to kind of find a new forward. I'm not sure that either of those two would be top of my list, though.
Frankfurt's Luka Jovic has been on their radar as well, but he looks much more likely to go to Real Madrid if he was to go. But, yeah.
It'll be a shame to... I presume Lischteiner won't hang around at Arsenal. I don't know, but really fun to watch him just...
You're not signing him for Gillingham next season?
Absolutely. Straight into the shit-housery 11. How do I pronounce it again? What's the correct pronunciation?
Aubameyang.
Aubameyang.
Aubameyang's penalty meant that... Did I get it right?
No,
that
was even
worse. Aubameyang.
That's the one.
Yeah. Aubameyang's penalty meant that he's now the third African player to make it to 20 league goals this season. Mane and Salah, the others. This season is the first in which more than one African player has made it to 20 goals in the Premier League. Opta Fred says, does Mesut Ozil earn a surprise call-up to the shithousery 11 of the week for not wanting Anthony Knockhart's shirt despite... giving him his. It's an awkward Hannah. No, you're all right, mate. Don't worry. Opta Fred is not part of the official Opta team, we should point out. Obviously, since last Thursday's pod, they beat Valencia 3-1 in the first leg of the semi-final. So all of their Champions League hopes now rest on winning the competition, unless there's a 9-goal swing between Spurs playing Everton and Arsenal going to Burnley. Since the second leg against Napoli, they've conceded 11 goals. And that first leg last week was the only win since then. Should they get through, it will either be Eintracht Frankfurt or Chelsea in the Europa League final. And we'll start part two in West London. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. On the 10th of May, that's this Friday, at Earth in Hackney, we're doing our almost end of the season review. Me, Barry, you, Jonathan, Lars Sivertsen, and just announced Ellis James. Still a few tickets available, so please come down and watch us. And we'll have fun, won't we, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm getting a train down from Sunderland that day, so anybody who's within a 3-hour, 40-minute radius has no excuse not to be there.
I love how... Mackham, you went.
I was going to say.
Even mentioning Sunderland. How weird. I'll be on the way down and I'll have a canny good time. You'll have a great laugh.
Well, yeah, hopefully.
Great. Chelsea 3, Watford 0. So Chelsea now in the box seat for third place. Christian writes, I followed Chelsea this year using nothing but fan tweets. My end of season assumption is that they've been relegated and were knocked out of every cup competition at the first hurdle. Am I close? I suspect the point Christian here is making is there does seem to be some sort of disconnect between Chelsea's position and what they've achieved and how the fans feel about Maurizio Sarri.
I've debated it myself as to sort of how, you know, his first season should be judged. I mean, on the one hand, you have got this team that got to a League Cup final, lost on penalties, took Man City all the way. They're in the Europa League semis and they've secured top four. I mean, what more were they really expecting in some regards? I was expecting better football from Chelsea. What he'd done at Napoli, really enjoyed watching that. We just haven't seen that for a long time. There's maybe little bits early on, which is quite strange because he'd always said that the football would get better as the season went on. I think it's actually become sort of stodgier as the campaign has gone on rather than sort of this Napoli style that we saw during his time in Italy. So I think that's maybe where the kind of debate comes from, and I know the Chelsea fans are pretty bored with it, and a lot of it is slow, particularly at home. They were terrible in the first half against Watford before they picked up. I think Loftus-Cheek makes a difference to them in midfield because he's got a goal threat. You have a look at he's the highest scoring midfielder they've got with six, and you know, if you haven't got sort of the strikers that have not been scoring goals, you need to get them from somewhere, and Kovacic, Barkley, Conte, Jorginho are not going to get many. So I think Loftus-Cheek in the last couple of months has been sort of a big addition to the team.
You mentioned Chelsea fans there. Part of the problem is their expectations, which have been set ever since the Roman Abramovich era began in 2004, because every time they've won the league, it's come in the first season of their new manager, I think. Mourinho, for sure. Ancelotti as well. Conte in his first season in England, when Mourinho came back again, I think it was in his first season they won again.
Yeah, because, I mean, the flip side of that same stat is every time a manager hasn't won the league, he's been sacked. So Mourinho
in Scolari,
did take the September of the following year.
Right.
And so I suspect Sarri would be the first Chelsea manager to survive not winning the league.
Right. So it's kind of them having to invert their expectations. They need to be patient for a year, whereas the whole new club culture that was built was... we just win. It doesn't matter how we do it. Like, we find a way. Mm. And I think they're just having to be a little bit more patient, particularly with this impending transfer embargo that's coming. But then, as Mark says, I see the performances of Ruben Loftus-Cheek and I wonder what is there to worry about.
Well, I mean, look, he came off the bench, didn't he? Chelsea were booed off at half-time. There's clearly some disconnect, isn't there? You know, he's come out and said, you know, Kante's got injured, right? And he said, like, I shouldn't have played him because he had a dodgy hamstring. And you think about the Europa League semi-final and there's that been whole issue about where Kante should play. Gary Cahill's interview as well in the Telegraph, basically slamming Maurizio Sarri, isn't it? Saying that this season has been terrible for me personally. It will be erased out of my head when I leave Chelsea. My last memory will be last season's FA Cup final. To be watching from the stands is something I didn't expect. If you're not playing a player, any player, for 2, 3 or 4 games, you don't have to give a reason for that. But if he gets to 8 or 9 games, then you have to explain the situation. What's going on? But the manager hasn't done that.
For a guy who is said to care so much about the club, to come out and give that kind of interview, that, I'm sorry, that's making it about Gary Cahill. It's not making it about the club. If you were caring about the club's future, then you would say, look, what happened between me and the manager happened, and that's where it goes. But I wish him and the club all the best.
Unless you think the manager's bad for the club.
Yeah,
which is equally a case, but I think that Sarri has still shown enough here that there have been sparks and embers. Like, okay, they got absolutely hammered away at Manchester City not too long ago, but they did win the reverse game of that. There have been some signs here.
Sure, but why wouldn't you just why wouldn't you just sit down someone and say, you're not in my plans?
Equally, Gary, we haven't heard Sarri's side of the argument here, if I remember correctly. So, and for Sarri to get involved with Cahill in public and have a public spat, that's not really going to be beneficial for him, because then you're taking the focus away from the team and you're making it more about Gary Cahill again. So
Sarri might just think it's not his job. I mean, he doesn't seem to have much say over transfers. So you might think, well, let the sporting director, let Marina Granovskaya.
Well, either way, either way, you know, you want Gary Cahill's influential enough there that if he's having a terrible time, that will surely have some impact on other senior pros there.
But also, Chelsea really hate winning the Europa League, don't they? They hated Rafa for winning the Europa League, and they're going to hate Sarri for winning it.
Sarri did bring Cahill on in the 89th minute, so they seem to have a short chat.
Well, of course, he really respected him. He'd let him start the game and go off after 16 minutes or whatever it was John Terry did.
They have had a good season. I mean, the fact that it's now confirmed that Arsenal and United won't get Champions League football, at least through the league. I mean, in Arsenal sense, Manchester United sense, it's done. Mm-hmm. Chelsea have had a decent season, but the problem is, as Jonathan has pointed out before, when anything is compared against what Liverpool and City are doing at the top, it looks comparatively poor. And when you are a top six club, all you want is everything.
Eden Hazard, 15 assists now, the most in the big 5 European leagues. So that'll be good for Real Madrid next year, won't it?
Have you noticed that he's been the man fronting their new home shirt campaign?
God, it's a horrible shirt, isn't it?
Well, the one that looks like a train seat.
Well, it looks a bit trains, like, right? It does. But I was thinking it looks like the Newcastle away shirt from about 94, 95-ish.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of away shirts, Crystal Palace's away shirt is the nicest one. And they wore it in style as they beat Cardiff 3-2. Have Cardiff been unlucky? Or have they just done well to stay in touch?
Well, they've been... I mean, obviously the Emiliano Sala thing, it goes beyond talk of luck and whatever. It's just a tragic thing, and it has one of the minor consequences of that has been that he hasn't been able to help Cardiff. So, that is a hugely difficult thing for any club to deal with, both in a practical sense and I guess in an emotional sense. So there's that. I think Warnock probably has a point that certainly in recent weeks they haven't had the rub of refereeing decisions, but whether that's actually true over the whole season. But, I mean, Cardiff fans will think back to the Chelsea game and think we got absolutely stiffed there, and it did. That they should have won that game, and if they had 3 more points, it would be a point behind Brighton, and Brighton playing City on the final day, and Cardiff are playing a deeply susceptible Manchester United. So.
Yeah, I mean, Sol Bamba scored a goal against Brighton that was offside, and, you know, that... I think if you keep going through that, I mean, Warnock will say that because he does, but I think they've given it a great go. I mean, you look at their budget, you look at their players, they've done better than I expected to take it as far as they did, you know, done better than Huddersfield and Fulham. And, you know, with a bit more quality in the box, maybe they could have stayed up. And I think that game against Palace, the 3-2, just highlighted their problems. They had chances, or Hoylett missed, you know, really chances that they should be taking, mm-hmm. at least one of those. And Bobby Reid did come on and score, but he was one of their big summer arrivals. I don't think he quite sort of got to the Premier League level. But they look like they're, if they can stay together, it looks like a team that can be very competitive, I think, in the Championship.
Neil Warnock said he's still got the managerial bug. He's going to take stock of his situation. Did anyone enjoy when he peered down the lens of the camera? I mean, I found it quite sinister.
Well, yes, because of all the all these videos of Bittersweet Symphony and all the Oasis videos that have followed it. I think it's been worthwhile.
Oh, no, absolutely fair. Zaha's first goal. Reports Palace are determined to sell only one of him or Wan-Bissaka. We all agreed that Zaha's more important to Palace than Wan-Bissaka, but I wouldn't be surprised if they both went.
Yeah, which is sad, but yeah.
Great. Wolves 1, Fulham 0. Wolves need a point to guarantee winning the Everton Cup. They'll definitely be there if Leicester fail to beat Man City tonight. Then Donker with the only goal. Lovely volley. And afterwards, it was interesting. He was talking about when he gave away that penalty against Watford in the semi-final in the last minute, and he felt guilty. So this is sort of paying back the fans.
Wolves. I don't quite understand. How are Wolves still 9 points behind United? Well, United seem to be dropping points all over the place. Wolves seem to be picking up points all over the place. And yet they're still 9 points behind.
It's a very good question. Still with the most points by a promoted team in the Premier League, 57, since Ipswich in 2001 got 66 points. The Marcus Stewart years?
I mean, continuity of team selection, sorry, Archie, has been key for Nuno. 9 players have started at least 30 matches. And that, obviously, good conditioning as part of that. But should they get into the Europa League next season, which of course they will if they finish seventh and Watford don't win the FA Cup, they will, to have a decent go in Europe, they will need to really beef up that squad, because it's a high quality front 11. But like, where is your replacement for Jimenez or somebody like that? I mean, if they would have had the injuries that, I don't know, say Spurs have had, you know, it could have been a very different season.
Wow, 9 players playing, starting 30 games. That is an amateur football manager's absolute dream. I've used 55 players this year.
You've got 2 clubs here in Wolves and Fulham, both who spent 100 million over the course of the season. The difference is that one of them had a plan and a good relationship between the sporting director and the coach, and the other did not.
Are you worried about Fulham next season?
Given the way that things are being done off the pitch and the decisions that are being made, yes. Okay, there have been some nice, shiny things held up to the fans, such as Tom Kearney signing a new contract now until 2024. Great. I would say it's likely that Scott Parker is going to be appointed as manager. Fine, but until the recruitment issue is sorted, and that if there's, it's all well and good appointing Scott Parker, but if there's not a good relationship between him and recruitment, where there's not been nearly enough emphasis on the characters that we sign into the club, and this is the thing, people may see that Tom Kearney scored the winner in the playoff final, for example, he did, but the reason that Fulham got promoted was because of the overall team and the way that Slavisa Jokanović played football, but also the characters of people like Kevin McDonald. Tom Kearney, for example, is the club captain at Fulham. But if you watched any of those kind of team huddles that they do before the game, he's not the guy giving the talk. It was Kevin McDonald, for example. So it is dependent on the club getting the right characters in place, and then maybe there's a chance. But Scott Parker's done well, but you can't judge. Fulham have played one of the top 20 worst Premier League seasons in history here. That does not speak well. In a similar way that, look, Neil Warnock can complain all he wants, but if you're losing 24 games in a season, then I don't think you're very unlucky to go down, even if he's working with far less resources, and I think deserves a little bit more sympathy here than Fulham do. So, yeah, Fulham, difficult to know exactly what's going to happen right now, particularly with the new stand being built as well. That's on ice right now. Nobody knows what's going on.
Welcome to the Premier League. Although, however, briefly, back into the Championship. Harvey Elliott, Premier League debut, 31 days after his 16th birthday. The youngest ever Premier League player. He was born on the 4th of April, 2003. It's bad enough being older than professional footballers. Being double the age, more than double the age of a professional footballer, is sad.
Sickening.
Producer Jonathan gives us number one, When He Was Born, Spirit in the Sky by Gareth Gates and the Kumars. Wilson. Actually, I don't know why I'm looking at Wilson for that. He wouldn't even know that was a cover, would he? Do you know the original Spirit in the Sky?
No.
Yeah. Norman Greenbaum.
Well, obviously you do, right. But Jonathan Wilson has no, music does not exist in his world.
And he's giving us grief before because we didn't know a Croatian football legend. Well, but you don't know.
If it's Osim, 78 today.
Norman Greenbaum.
West Ham 3, Southampton 0. Fraser Forster's first game since late 2017. Did I miss something? What did Fraser Forster do for the whole
just,
of 20...
Just had a terrible run of form, didn't he?
Was that it? He wasn't injured?
Don't think so.
He had a whole of 2018 and a gap year.
I guess, yeah. Well, nice for him. He's from Hexham, isn't he? Went to my school, I think.
Everton 2, Burnley 0 was a Friday night game. So Everton's good form continues. In the Football League, and I know some Everton and Burnley and West Ham and Southampton fans will be sad we didn't do that much on them, but those games didn't really matter. Norwich are champions. They won 2-1 at Aston Villa. Mario Vrancic with the winner late on. Timu Pukki scored their first. His 29th goal of the season gets the championship golden boot. Derby County sealed the last playoff spot with a 3-1 win over West Brom. Harry Wilson scoring the final goal from the penalty spot after a very soft foul. Hal Robson-Kanu getting a straight red for kicking out Bradley Johnson in the 92nd minute. A three-match ban ruled out of both semis in the final if West Brom make it there. What are you doing, Hal Robson-Kanu?
No, he was an absolute idiot.
Yeah. A total madness, right? Playoffs then, Villa, West Brom and Derby Leeds. There'll be plenty of Spygate chat for the next week. Who do you fancy going through in those two? What do you think the final will be?
I think it'll be England's brave, honest Frank will overcome the deceitful RG. And I think he'll probably end up playing brave John Terry in the final.
Absolutely.
Is there time to have a quick shout of praise for Norwich?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we have done already, but, you know, you can.
Just because of the way that they've done this, in terms of having absolutely no budget, this was their first season without parachute payments, and to shop around as cleverly as they have done, and to keep faith with Daniel Farke, you look at the way that Wolves went up, that's not a blueprint for, or a sustainable blueprint for championship clubs. I think that how clever Norwich have been in their promotion push is encouraging, at least, to think that you don't need to have millions and millions to go up, and maybe a little bit of hope on the horizon of what is a very bleak outlook in the Premier League if you're outside the top six.
Yeah, I mean, I think of those top six, Norwich and Sheffield United are both the surprises to be in that top six. Rotherham, Bolton and Ipswich are all relegated. We already knew this. Nice tweet from Nottingham Forest, Joe Lolly. Nottingham Forest tweet, your winner following thousands of fans' votes, Nottingham Forest are delighted to announce that Joe Lolly's been crowned the club's player of the season. He tweets, would also like to sincerely say thank you to absolutely none of my teammates, as this is an individual award, losers. he did an interview earlier in the season, an interesting guy, very bright guy, Joe Lolly. League One, we already knew that Luton and Barnsley were up. Luton are champions after beating Oxford. Begrudging congratulations to the Hatters. In the playoffs, Doncaster got the last spot. They'll play Charlton, who finished third. Repeat of the Chequer trade, Portsmouth, Sunderland. Jonathan, how are you feeling?
We have no chance. No, none at all. We're playing abysmally. We haven't beaten Portsmouth, I think, in the last nine meetings. I mean, and the really worrying thing in terms of the whole rebuilding of the club is Sunderland's best two players this season have been Lee Cattermole and Aidan McGeady, who have been there for ages and are both significantly over 30. So, I mean, I'm not screaming Ross out yet, but give it half-time, second game next season. No, I mean, yeah, he came into a difficult situation. He had to build a squad. I'm just not convinced that they've done it that well.
I went to Exeter away last season, first game of the season, Cambridge United. 33 minutes in, the first shout of Derry out. At the bottom, Bradford, Scunthorpe, Walsall and Plymouth are down. Controversy in the Plymouth-Scunthorpe game. Have you seen this? So both needed to win to have a chance of survival. Plymouth are 2-1 up. Their keeper, Matt Macy, has the ball, is injured, sort of waves to everyone that he's going to chuck it out and he's injured. But he didn't throw it hard enough. And Josh Morris just chipped it back over his head and no walked-in goals. Probably a good thing that Plymouth scored the winner.
Epic shithousery.
Yeah, massive. Not that it mattered because they both went down anyway. Scunny's chairman, Peter Swan, I apologise wholeheartedly to everyone who's seen what's happened there. AFC Wimbledon got a point on the last day to survive on goal difference. Amazing from Wally Downs. They've lost just one of their last 12, 10 points from safety with fewer than 3 months to go. You're nodding, Archie, as if you wanted to say something. You're just agreeing.
I'm just buzzing.
Oh, great. That's
great. It. Just keep, no, I...
Not like a Churchill dog.
Yeah, right.
You're just there in the back of the car having a nice time.
Very much so.
Excellent news.
Very much so.
Shall I crack on?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. In League Two, no wins in their last five, but that doesn't matter to Lincoln, who are champions. Bury were already up as well. So well done to MK Dons, who got the last spot in a winner-takes-all game with Mansfield. Over 20,000 at Stadium NK. Mansfield took 5,000 there. They go into the playoffs. They'll play Newport. The other game is a vegan scouse-off as Forest Green take on Tranmere. And at the bottom, well done, Sol Campbell. Macclesfield needed a point to be sure of safety. They got one at home to the mighty Cambridge. They were bottom, 7 points from safety when he took over in November. Did anyone expect him to succeed?
No, I didn't. I saw Macclesfield shortly before Mark Yates got sacked. They were beaten at Stevenage, and you just could not believe that this was a Football League team. They were just lacking in quality. Didn't even look like a sort of non-league, sort of fifth-tier team, really. And so for them and for Sol Campbell to have picked them up, to have organised them, because defensively they improved out of all recognition, given the fact that Campbell himself had kind of walked out on Notts County and didn't seem to enjoy going down to that level as a player, to come back as a manager and do it was, I think, an incredible achievement. And he's been linked with jobs like the Plymouth one now, and which would, although it's the same division, would be, you know, a step up in terms of budget. So he definitely, you know, I think deserves now to, you know, be taken seriously.
Yeah, and plenty of problems off the pitch that Macclesfield have had as well, players not getting paid and things like that. So, yeah, hats off to Sol. Notts County go down then with Yeovil, who sort of fell off a cliff halfway through the season. Orient are up already. They'll be joined by either Salford, the class of 92 Salford, or AFC Fylde, who beat Salford beat Eastleigh on penalties yesterday. Anyone want an AFC Fylde quiz?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, question one. AFC Fylde sits between two professional football teams. Any idea which they are?
Well, geographically?
Geographically.
Well, it's on the Lancashire coast somewhere, isn't it? So
Blackpool,
between Blackpool,
Fleetwood,
and Morecambe?
You can't Google map it.
I'm not. It's...
Blackpool is correct, is one of them.
Fleetwood?
Nope.
Not Morecambe?
Nope.
Who else is up there?
A famous old club.
Accrington?
Nope. Who have some sort of rivalry.
Preston?
With... Correct!
Oh, so it's not on the coast. It's kind of just
no, it's not on the coast. Right. Well, thanks all for playing. That's the end of the AFC Fylde quiz. Fitbar, James says, with two games to go, just how many more red cards can Rangers get this season? Alan McGregor. So if you haven't seen it, he's got the ball, he kicks out of his hands, and then plants his studs into the back of the opposition centre-forward and then goes down holding his ankle. Totally bizarre red card.
The replay of this just is so glorious because you could dub over the Kung Fu fighting soundtrack and it would fit perfectly just because of the way he then feigns so much. Just... as if they haven't had enough going on with Alfredo Morelos.
Exactly. Well, Steven Gerrard has sort of come out again and said, look, this is, it's getting ridiculous now.
But what does this say about him as a manager?
Surely it's got to be his job in some part.
Can you, I mean, you can't blame the manager when your goalkeeper does that.
You can, though, when there's been this many red cards.
And here's a man who was sent off seconds after coming on as a substitute.
Oh, that heat map is good, isn't it? That heat map's a brilliant one.
Yeah.
That is true.
I mean, when the fight thing happened, I did think that was slower than Gerrard, right? Gerrard was even quicker than that.
Yeah, yeah. Although, if you take Morelos out, then there aren't that many red cards, you know, because he's got five
of
them.
Well, that's like saying if you take Salah out of Liverpool, yeah, not that many goals. I mean, this season have been, but...
Celtic won the league yesterday. They play Rangers next week. big question doing the rounds. Should Rangers give Celtic a guard of honour?
Yes.
I mean, no fan cares about a guard of honour, do they? Do you? I don't care.
But when did guard of honour start?
Well, yeah, so, no, that's a fair point. But if the custom is that you have a guard of honour, you shouldn't not do it just because you hate them.
True, but I don't.
Did you see? Do you see what Boca did with River over the weekend?
No, no.
Boca won the Super Copa or whatever they call it, the equivalent of the Charity Shield. Had these mad celebrations, like ludicrous celebrations, and on the trophy they taped over River Plate's name.
That's lovely, isn't it? Sky Italia saying, reporting that Jose has had an offer from Celtic. Can anyone see that?
No.
Very unlikely.
No. I just don't know how they could afford him. I mean, maybe Jose's just so desperate to win trophies, he thinks. Like, I mean, given he's a man who slagged off Guardiola for going to a league where the kit man can win it, i.e. the Bundesliga, to then go to, for himself to go to Celtic. But yeah, would be...
Well, you know, you'd be the man that got them to 10 in a row, wouldn't you? Or you wouldn't, I mean...
Which would be genuinely hilarious.
Is Stevie G?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to could Celtic really kind of grind out an entire season, just sitting men behind the ball, playing Jose football?
But what would be the point for Celtic? I mean, if you've got that kind of budget...
Europe, I guess.
But I mean, if you've got that kind of budget, I'd rather invest it in the team, really, because I don't think the coaches... I don't see how he's, you know, Jose Mourinho suddenly going to improve them that much to win a Europa League or, you know, the latter stages of the Champions League. You may as well just invest it in a striker or something like that if you've got the money.
Fair. In the Women's FA Cup final, as predicted, Manchester City beat dogged West Ham 3-0 in front of a crowd of 43,000, just shy of last year's records. All the goals in the second half. Kira Walsh got the opener of the three goal scorers. She's the oldest at 22. 20-year-old Georgia Stanway named the PFA Young Player of the Year last week. She got the second. And 18-year-old Lauren Hemp came off the bench to score from outside the box over the West Ham keeper Anna Morehouse. The England squad's going to be announced this week. There were 9 City players in the last one for the friendly against Spain. It'll be interesting to see how many make it this time around. The 2019 Women's World Cup kicks off a month tomorrow, and that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll round up Europe, beginning with Archie Rintutt live in the studio. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Archie, you're still here, so let's start in Germany. Producer Jonathan has gone very smutty and written Dortmund dropped a bollock in the Bundesliga race. Bayern won in the early kickoffs. Dortmund can only get a point from Bremen. 2-0 up with 20 minutes to go. What happens next?
Many assume that Bayern go and win it.
But well, no, they're 2-0 up with 20 minutes to go, Dortmund, aren't they?
This Saturday deserves some expansion.
Right, okay. Sit back and and welcome for the Archie Rintutt's Bundesliga expansion.
It's just nice to come in from the kebab shop cold.
Oh, absolutely.
So Bayern did not play very well against Hannover. They were fortunate that Hannover... basically offered nothing. I mean, you could see that by the fact of how Joshua Kimmich and David Alaba were just hanging around the Hannover 18-yard box for most of the
just
game.
Like a couple of ne'er-do-wells on a street corner.
Right. But Hannover scored, which made things interesting because Hannover needed to stay up. They still lost 3-1. But yeah, Bayern were far from convincing. And you're thinking, okay, if Dortmund now in this late game against Werder Bremen, if they were to win that, then they would have been 2 points behind Bayern, and Bayern have to face Leipzig away from home next week, which is difficult. They will be their opponents in the German Cup final, and Eintracht Frankfurt on the final day. Now, before this weekend, you would have said Eintracht Frankfurt, tough game, except that Eintracht Frankfurt in the race for the Champions League went and lost 6-1 away at Leverkusen, and all of those goals came in the first half as well, which is a Bundesliga record.
That always happens. If you're 6-0 at half time, it's never 12-0, is it? You just go and double it.
I saw some stats that said Leverkusen had over 1,000 passes.
Wow.
Which,
well, if you have at least 6 shots, that's hard to fit in.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they had 82% possession in the first half. Worth giving a shout out to Kai Havertz, the teenage sensation for Leverkusen, and Julian Brandt, who have been branded, I think they've been given a couple name of Braverts, which is starting to do the rounds in Germany. But Brandt is being mooted with a move to Dortmund now. Havertz likely to stay another season, providing they get Champions League football, which they're now level on points with Frankfurt. But so too Dortmund away at Bremen. They were cruising. Christian Pulisic scored a really wonderful goal, very encouraging signs for Chelsea fans at least. And then they went 2-0 up through Paco Alcacer. Great free kick, his 18th of the season. And you're thinking Dortmund are clear. They had so many chances to finish them off. And then Roman Bürki, I remember you used to say doing a Roman Bürki was having a howler.
It's been beaten at the near post officially, a Roman Bürki.
Well, he's been having a tremendous season. He's been one of their best players, but he then did a Massimo Taibbi and got nutmegged here, and that brought Bremen back into the game. And then Manuel Akanji, and Dortmund had to make more changes at the back. This is their 16th back four combination that they've started with in 32 games, which goes against all cliches that, oh, you need to have a settled back four. I mean, injuries have done that. And then Claudio Pizarro, the eternal 40-year-old, swinging in his foot there, and Werder Bremen equalise, and Dortmund are distraught. Bremen probably could have gone and won the game, but instead they're now 4 points behind. They've got Dusseldorf at home next week, and they finish the final day with Gladbach away. Lots of narrative if Bayern lose against Leipzig and Dortmund were to beat Dusseldorf, because it would mean on the final day you'd have Niko Kovac potentially being prevented the title by his former club in Eintracht Frankfurt, a club who have got a lot better without him, in all honesty. And it would mean that Dortmund could go win the title at Gladbach, which is where Lucien Favre basically rebuilt Gladbach as a club. They're still very much kind of in his shadow in that.
So a much more sort of sensible Netflix biopic happening in Germany than in England.
It feels like you're trying to create a stereotype here.
Well, maybe. Yes, a really well-organised one over there.
But yeah, so it means that 4 points between Bayern and Dortmund with two games to play. And in the Champions League race as well, you've got Frankfurt in fourth now on 54 points. Leverkusen with a goal difference of five less, also on 54 points. And then just 2 points back from them, Gladbach and Wolfsburg. And three, and just a point further back from that, you have Hoffenheim. Just to quickly mention second division, because Hamburg are a pretty big club who are now in danger of not going up. Again, they lost 3-0 at home to Ingolstadt.
They started a new clock. They started a new countdown to going up again, or not?
I don't actually know. But
I think the clock has now changed to when the club was formed, I think, rather than how long it's been.
Right. That's what they've done. So Hamburg are in fourth after losing that. They are now without a win in seven. You've got Union Berlin in third, who could have gone into the promotion place. They lost away at Darmstadt. And then you've got Paderborn in second. They lost as well. I think eight of the top nine in the Bundesliga all lost this weekend. And Cologne are nearly up. So, yeah, whoever wants to go up, it's kind of similar to the Premier League top four race, you would compare it. So, yeah.
All right, in Spain, Barcelona changed their entire starting 11. Clearly listening to Paul Doyle. Messi sensationally dropped for their defeat at Celta Vigo, meaning they'll be fully rested for the trip to Liverpool this week. Atletico Madrid, another team with very little to play for in the league. They lost 3-0 at Espanyol. A Diego Godin own goal opening the scoring. Much changed Real Madrid team beat Villarreal 3-2. Mariano Diaz getting just his second and third goals of the season. And Getafe beat Girona to go 3 points clear of fifth and threaten to make their first ever appearance in the Champions League. La Liga lost two teams this weekend. Rayo Vallecano were beaten at Levante, and Huesca got thumped 6-2 by Valencia to end both of their stays in the top flight. Just one spot left to fill, with five teams still in danger. Archie, you're doing some sort of semaphore to producer Jonathan. What does it say there?
It says that I forgot to mention that it was confirmed by Bayern that Franck Ribéry will be leaving the club at the end of the season, which means the end of the Robin and Ribéry era. That's it.
Breaking news, I'm hearing.
I saw a note being passed around the class, and it would end up being kind of something deeply humiliating.
Anyway, let's go to Italy and get this report from Paolo Bandini.
a great weekend for fans of the underdog in Serie A, because Atalanta have made a huge step towards claiming a Champions League spot for next season. They were already fourth heading into the weekend, but they won 3-1 away to Lazio, which effectively eliminated the Biancocelesti from contention altogether, and it also extended their advantage over fifth place Roma to 3 points, because Roma drew with Genoa. Now, the first tiebreaker in Italy's head-to-head results, but since both games between Atalanta and Roma finished 3-3, it'll go to goal difference between those two. But Atalanta's goal difference is plus 28 and Roma's is plus 15, and there's only 3 games left to play. So effectively, an extra half point there in Atalanta's advantage. So still not over yet, of course. Milan can also pull to within 3 points of Atalanta if they beat Bologna on Monday night. On recent form, I definitely wouldn't bet on that. And Atalanta do still have to go away to Juventus before the end of the season. But still, what they've done here is absolutely extraordinary. The 14th biggest wage bill in Serie A, about an eighth of what Juventus spend, and they're there absolutely on merit. They've scored 71 goals in 35 games this season, most in the division, and even Fabio Capello was comparing them to Ajax the other night for the ambition of their attacking football and the willingness to commit players to one-on-one situations all over the pitch and accept the risks and the reward that come with that. So fantastic coaching by Giampiero Gasperini, who's really getting more out of players there than I think anyone has, entertaining players as well, like Papu Gomez, Josip Perisic, Duvan Zapata, attacking guys who just playing wonderful, wonderful football at the moment. Definitely not so clear on Ajax's level at all, but they have been tremendously fun to watch. They'll be back in Rome to face Lazio again in the Coppa Italia final as well in a week and a half's time. You may recall Atalanta, by the way, beat Juventus 3-0 in the Cup quarterfinals this year. They haven't won it since the 1960s, so that'd be a huge achievement. You've already got fans at the training ground this Sunday welcoming them back, 4,000 fans with fireworks and all the rest. So huge atmosphere in Bergamo at the moment. Elsewhere in Serie A, lots of draws for the top clubs. Roma, as already mentioned, also Inter, who still aren't secure of their Champions League spot. They're in third. Juventus drew the Turin derby with, yes, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo riding to the rescue after they fell behind to an early goal from Sasa Lukic. A lot of Juve's players, to be honest, look like they are already on the beach, but Ronaldo is still trying to finish a Serie A's top scorer. He's on 21 goals now, but unfortunately for him, Fabio Quagliarella also got 2 this weekend and remains in first place on 25.
Thank you so much for that, Paolo. To France now. 6 draws in Ligue 1 this weekend. In the match between second and third, Lille drew with Lyon, leaving Lyon vulnerable in the final Champions League spot. Saint-Étienne in fourth won their 6th match in 7 at Monaco to pull within a single point of the promised land. Guingamp were one of the other teams to draw, doing their bid for survival. No good at all. Come on, Guingamp. They're 8 points from safety, 5 points from the relegation playoff with 3 games to go. Just one question, and we touched on it earlier, but we should get the official line from Mark Langdon. Good tweets, TBH. Can we get a Mark Langdon vegetable count? Daniel, has Mark Langdon eaten any vegetables since he was last on? Mark, what's the latest?
One tweeter got very angry that we didn't count potatoes in sort of... we're going without potatoes, aren't we? So I'm allowed to eat potatoes. They won't count for vegetables. No, I haven't had any vegetables, nor fruit. Oh, but we've got to be coming on towards a month now, I would have thought. Since I had those,
how do you not have scurvy?
Since I had those peas, a while ago.
Are you genuinely telling me not one bit of fruit, not one vegetable, not even in like a juice or something?
No, I don't like juice.
I'm not a monster.
You sounded like a 5-year-old kid there talking to their parents.
I feel good. I'm ready to go again today. I've had a. I've been busy working and, I feel all right.
You look healthy.
It's an extraordinary complexion for a man who has naught a day. This is naught of your naught a day. anyway, that's how we should have ended the pod. That's how we have ended the pod. Thanks so much for your time, Archie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Max.
Stay healthy. Thank you, Jonathan.
Cheers, thank you.
We'll be back on Thursday. And yeah, we've got a live show on Friday as well. So if you want to come, Earth in Hackney, me, Jonathan, Barry, Lars and Ellis James, come and say hello.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.